20. A shock ran through Nen Yim as she stepped onto the leaf-littered soil of Zonama's sea coat. It went from her toes to the tips of her tendril headdress and left her gaping. She remembered the first time she had set foot on a real planet of stone and soil and biosphere. It had been the moon of Yavin 4, just before her elevation to Adept. She had been filled with wonder, fascination, and trepidation. To appearances, Zonama's sea coat was not much different from Yavin. Vegetation towered in a high canopy above her, and strange sounds of insects and animals created a steady drone. And yet it was different. Yavin 4 had been utterly alien to everything she had ever known, and even Yuuzhan'tar, now bioformed with plants and animals from the lost homeworld, felt wrong. But this place felt right, as even the world ship she had grown up on never had. It was as if a piece of her had been cut off, and until it was replaced, she hadn't even known to miss it. She realized her mouth was open and closed it. She glanced at her companions, all of whom had come out of the ruined Sikotan ship by now. Harar and the Prophet looked stunned, as she must. The two Jedi looked curious, but the planet clearly hadn't had the impact on them that it had on her. Of course, she found human faces difficult to read, despite their similarity in structure. She tried to shake the feeling off so she could observe objectively. Could there be some sort of pollen in the air? Some microbe that affected Yuuzhan Vong, but not humans? Possibly. Something that lulled the thinking mind and created feelings of belonging. Such drugs had been used on the worldships in the deeps of space to keep the population from going mad in the long dark. "I must begin immediately," she said.
"This is the place," the Prophet asserted.
Oddly enough, he sounded surprised. Harar said nothing, but the look he shot the Prophet could only have been described as respect. Suddenly annoyed, Nen Yim went back into the ship to get some of her tools. After a moment, she realized Yusha was following her. "What do you want?" she asked.
"I would like to assist you."
"I need no assistance from—" she didn't finish. The Prophet pulled himself up before her.
"Ashamed one," he said. "Come, Nen Yim, you are a thinker, and I think a heretic of a sort. Can't you see past my disfigurements and understand that you and I are here for the same purpose?"
A hot, unfamiliar feeling passed through her, and her tendrils twitched in consternation. "Very well," she said. "This ship is no longer suitable to function as a laboratory. I wish to move my apparati outside and contrive some sort of shelter. You may help with that if you wish."
"You will not regret this, Master Yim."
She nodded and continued toward the back of the ship. It bothered her, speaking with a shamed one, but she knew it should not. Korin wiped the sweat from his brow.
"After this," he said, "our next priority is to find Luke."
He sliced his lightsaber through the base of another sapling and added it to the pile. Nearby, Tahiri did the same.
"There, that ought to be enough for the frame."
"I don't know about you, but the planet is still interfering with my senses. How do we find Master Skywalker without the Force?" Tahiri asked. "It's a big planet. We can't just start walking and hope to run into him."
"No, but this place is supposed to be inhabited. By Ferroans, if I understand correctly, and they ought to be able to help us get in contact with the others."
"I haven't seen any signs of civilization," Tahiri said.
"Neither have I," Korin admitted. "But tomorrow I'll start looking. Just short searches, and maybe I can talk Harar and the Prophet into going with me."
"What about me?" Tahiri asked. "What do I do?"
"I want you to keep an eye on the Shaper. You know her better than I do. What I don't want is any of them left to their own devices for too long."
"Okay," Tahiri replied. Korin slung the poles over his shoulder and started back toward the clearing near the ship where Nen Yim was depositing a variety of weird biotes.
"What have you done?" Harar asked when he saw them. His tone was dense with reproach. "Nen Yim said she needed a shelter," Korin explained. "The ship is pretty twisted up and probably won't be very pleasant when its organic components start to deteriorate. So that means building a hut. These will furnish the frame."
"You killed living things to build a shelter? We're to stay in dead life?"
"Unless you brought the means to grow your own, yes. I don't know about you, but I don't want to sleep in the rain. Unless you have a better idea."
"I consider," the priest pleaded. We came to this place following the legends of a living planet, a planet like no other. If these legends are true, is it best we begin by killing things? What if the planet is angered?
I never thought I would hear a Yuuzhan Vong say anything remotely like that, Corin said. You guys started this war by wiping out not just a few saplings, but entire ecosystems. Remember Belkaden? Remember Ithor?
Yes, Harar said stonily.
He seemed to want to say more, but he didn't. Corin glanced at the saplings.
Unfortunately, he confessed, you're right. I wasn't thinking. Which means I suppose we need to find some sort of natural shelter. A cave, maybe, or a rock shelter. There might be some in the high ground to the east of here. Would you care to accompany me, Harar?
I would, the priest said, and thank you for considering my words.
What about you, Yuuzhan? Corin asked hopefully.
I'm about to go on a collecting expedition, Nenyim said. He will accompany me.
That sounds neat, Tahiri said. Can I go?
Ace's kid, Corin thought.
The shaper shrugged noncommittally. Tahiri shared a quick mental smile with Corin. He was amazed at how quickly she had turned a misstep into an opportunity, solving their immediate problems rather neatly. He wished she could deal with social situations as conveniently.
Nom Anur watched Nen Yim move among cane-like plants, stroking them with her shaper's hand and occasionally recording cryptic entries in a portable casa. The Jedi brat sat on a log some distance away, pretending not to be interested, but she was watching them, nonetheless. The shaper had been collecting for hours, but so far as Nom Anur could see, she hadn't collected anything. She had examined trees, shrubs, moss, fungi, and arthropods with singular intensity. She hadn't shared anything of what she was thinking, though the expressions that flitted across her usually impassive face indicated that she found much to think about. One thing had come clear, though. Shimmer was right to fear this planet. He had seen the faces of his Yuuzhan Vong companions, knew they felt the same affinity for this world that he did. When he'd made his prophecy, he'd been mining a few scraps of intelligence and some very old, and strongly forbidden, legends. He hadn't believed it himself, of course. He'd been trying to give his followers a ray of hope in otherwise dark times, give them something specific to fight for, a homeworld and redemption. Now he had to revise all of that. Zonama Seacoat was real, and it seemed not at all impossible that it could be the planet of legend. Of course, in the legends it was taboo. The legends forbade even entering the galaxy where such a planet was found. What did that mean? Had the Yuuzhan Vong battled with Zonama Seacoat in the past and lost? Had Shimra known about the planet's presence here even before the invasion began? There had been rumors that Quoriel had balked at invading. Then Quoriel was dead, and Shimra ascended to the throne. Had the Supreme Overlord gone against prophecy, against the gods themselves? Or was the legend somehow wrong? Zonama Seacoat certainly did not feel taboo. It didn't matter. This was his moment. With his prophecy proven true, more and more shamed ones would flock to him. His army would grow unstoppable until Shimra fell, and Nom Anur rose. Yes. Rose to govern not the glorious Yuuzhan Vong, but a state of shamed ones. Oh well, better than death, and better than nothing. A gasp from Nen Yim cut short his reverie. He looked and saw her bent over yet another plant, one that consisted of long filament-like fronds. Or perhaps it wasn't a plant, for the fronds seemed to be moving of their own accord.
What is it?
He asked. A limb tree, she murmured. She looked stunned. Or a very close relative. Nom Anur had never heard of a limb tree. Before he could ask what one was and why she seemed so surprised, she turned to him, her eyes nearly ferocious.
Do you truly believe this is the planet of your prophecy?
Of course, Nom Anur replied. Why else would I risk the perils involved in finding it?
From whence came this prophecy?
She demanded. From a vision I had. Of this world shining like a beacon, like a new star in the skies of Yuuzhan-Tar.
In the skies of Yuuzhan-Tar?
That was my vision, he said. For prophecy is not always literal. We are in the sky of Yuuzhan-Tar.
though at such a vast distance that even the star this planet orbits is probably unseen. I believe it meant that Zonama Seacoat was here, in the stars, waiting only for us to find it and be worthy of it, and so we have.
And you believe it will redeem the shamed ones?
Yes, but not just the shamed ones. Once they are redeemed, all of us are.
But this vision, she persisted, where did it come from?
I do not know the true source of my visions, Gnome Anor said carefully. Only that they are always true. Perhaps the gods send them. Perhaps this planet itself sent them. What does it matter?
Because that is a limb tree, she said.
I do not understand you.
The limb tree was a plant of the homeworld. It has long been extinct except as a code in the Kong Kasa. I grew one for myself to adorn my apartment at Shimra's court.
And now you find one here. Curious.
No, not curious. Impossible.
He waited for her to explain further.
These other things, she said, these plants and creatures around us, they share much with our own biota at the cellular and molecular level. That is one thing I came here to confirm. The Seacoten ship might have been a fluke, a false similarity that arose from similar engineering, but this life you see all around us evolved naturally, or at least most of it did. It does not bear the mark of shaping. And though, as I said, there is reason to believe we are all biologically related to all of this, no other species I have seen here corresponds on any one-to-one basis with the extinct life forms of the homeworld.
And yet this limb tree is one of our species.
Yes, the differences between this tree and a limb are small enough that they must have shared a common ancestor only a few millennia ago.
I still don't understand the significance. She gave him an exasperated stare.
Relationship at the molecular level could be explained by a common ancestor millions or even billions of years ago. In all that time, it is not so far-fetched to believe that somehow life from our home galaxy was brought here by a long-extinct spacefaring race, or merely as spores, riding the faint push of light and currents of gravity. But something as complex and specific as a limb tree cannot be explained in that way. It indicates more recent contact between this world and our own.
Perhaps Commander Val left one behind.
When I accessed the Kong Kasa for my limb tree's genetic code, it had not been accessed in 1,000 years. The plant is of no use to a spacefaring race.
How do you explain it, then?
I can't. Perhaps there was an earlier ship, a world ship that left our galaxy long before the main fleet. Perhaps they came here.
She stopped.
No, that can only be conjecture. I need more data before I begin to talk like this.
Gnome Anor smiled. But I must say it is enjoyable to hear you talk like this. Your passion is obvious. You are a credit to our people, Nenyim. You will find the right path for us.
That got a smile from her. I thought that was your job.
I had the vision, but you are the one realizing it. I am little more than a passenger on this trip.
Your insight has been interesting, however.
I wish I understood enough about your work to be of real aid.
You can be, if you're willing to learn.
I'm eager to, he said.
Good. You carry the Kasa and record what I tell you. I'm going to collect a few live specimens of the arthropods living in that rotten log over there.
And with that, she placed a world of information into Gnome Anor's hand.
He stared at it,
feeling he had won a victory, not quite sure what to do with it.